everybody. Let's give a warm Provincetown welcome to the fabulous Dyketone.
Thank you very much, boys and girls, and welcome to our 11th annual assembly at Dyke High. Yeah. Well, you know, some of your faces look mighty familiar, and the sounds of your laughter, pretty familiar, and we're probably familiar to lots of you folks, too. But for those of you who've never met us before, we'd like to introduce ourselves.
Boom, boom, ba 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 boom. Boom, ba 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 boom. Boom, ba 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 boom. Boom, ba ba ba.
Well, hello, we are the Dyketones, and we are here to play for you. We've got the beat you can move your feet to, so go put on your dancing shoes. We're gonna have some fun, no time to scare no one with all the crazy things we do. So hurry, don't be late, whether you're gay or straight. We're gonna knock the socks off you. We're gonna knock the socks off you. Well, we got Bobby socks, big on the skin. She can really keep the beat. And we got Bonacious playing on guitar. And Goody Two Shoes blowing keys. And we got Penny Loafer thumping bass guitar. That bass is just about complete. And then there's Chucky. It's true that she is quite a woman. We'll knock the socks right off your feet. We'll knock the socks right off your feet.
This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and tonight I'm bringing you two very special interviews. The first is with Char Priolo, who in 1977 founded a good-time rock and roll lesbian band called the Fabulous Dyketones. And in the second half of the show, you'll hear from one of the movers and shakers in the genre of gay and lesbian chorus music. And he's also brought us a number of gay musicals. He is director, composer, and songwriter Eric Lane Barnes. But first, on to the Dyketones. Let me set the stage for you. As you heard in the opening song, their show takes place at Dyke High, and some of the group members might be wearing leather jackets and white tees, with their hair slicked back greaser style. And others might don poodle skirts and bouffant wigs in a whole campy incarnation of 50s butch and femme. They took on stage names like Bobby Socks, Penny Loafer, and Chucky Linguini, and it all worked. What started out almost as a lark has now lasted into their 29th year, and along the way became a lesbian institution. To anyone who has spent their summer vacation in Provincetown during the last couple decades, they know the Fabulous Dyketones. The music you'll hear during the interview comes from their only commercial release, called The Fabulous Dyketones Live in P-Town, from 1988. So I'm very pleased to share with you an interview with the founder of the group, Char Priolo. How did the Fabulous Dyketones get started?
Well, we were actually almost a joke. It was back in Portland, Oregon in 1977. There was a women's group forming, a social group, and they were called Enlightened Women. And they wanted to sponsor a New Year's Eve party. So there were some of us that were part of what was called the Ursa Minor Choir. A woman named Naomi Little Bear, who was the person that wrote the music that the choir sang. And she and I used to practice before people got there. We would just do music that we grew up with, I in San Francisco and she in L.A., just radio stuff. And we had a game that developed. It was either she or I would sing a line of a song, and the opposite person had to come in with a harmony for the next line, or else owe the other person a Coke. And so it was 50s music that we were doing, 50s and early 60s. And that's basically what we were doing when another person came in and said, you know, you should start a band, a 50s or an oldies band. So I facetiously said, yeah, right, and we could call ourselves the Dyke Tones. And that was a play on 50s and 60s early choral groups that were, you know, the Clef Tones and the Harp Tones. So it was just kind of wordplay. So when we put those two things together, the social club looking for a band and us having fun messing around with the old songs, we decided, well, maybe let's go for it. Well, this was in November that this all happened. So by the end of December for New Year's Eve, we knew six songs. And we played. We actually did play for the party. And since our repertoire was so short, we did all of them three times each. We did the whole set list three times. And we were quite worried because as we were slicking our hair back in the bathroom of the venue, we started looking a whole lot like our dads and brothers and uncles. And it was a very PC era in 77, and we had no idea if our friends were going to like what we were doing or think that we were trying to be men and actually boo us, because what we were doing, in our estimation, was being lesbians of the 50s, where you had to be either very butch or very femme. There wasn't anything called gay back then. It was very butch or very femme.
Imagine yourself in a land in which there was too much butch wax. Too many poodle skirts. Too many fast cars. And not enough fast women. Well, case in point, one Chucky Linguini on our stage only moments ago is even now being transformed into her alter ego, Cha-Cha Linguini. Cha-Cha, you have just entered the Dyke Tone Zone.
Hello. My name is Cha-Cha Linguini. I am the exchange student to Dyke High. I come from Puerto Rico. And for those of you who are politically correct, Puerto Ricana I am. So get over yourselves, eh? Thank you. You know, something very funny happened to me here today at the Dyke High. In the drama department, they asked me to be in the play. It made me so happy. But then, they asked me to be the baby. Yo no comprendo nada aquí.
How did the show go over?
Well, it blew us all away. Everybody had the best time. There were self-appointed go-go dancers, and people were like screaming and grabbing onto our legs and just screaming our characters' names. We each had a fictitious name that we took on. And they
acted like you were teen idols.
Yes, yes. And everybody just got into the drama of it all. It was just, it was a most pleasant surprise, I think, for everybody there.
Did you become the Dytones right away then, as far as an organized group?
Well, we did that project, and then we didn't do anything at all for about 6 months. And then in July, there was a women's music festival at Evergreen College in Washington State. By the time we did the July following, and that would have been in 78, the Women's Music Festival there, we had the instrumentation that one needs for a rock and roll group. We had drums and a bass, lead guitar, bass guitar.
By then, were you the Fabulous Dyketones?
No, we weren't the Fabulous Dyketones until 1984, which was our second year here in Provincetown. What we would do at the end of every show was just run down the center aisle of the venue to the back of the room and then form a reception line to just thank people for being at the show as they left. And they would come through and say, "Oh my God, you were fabulous. This was just fabulous." And over people would say, "We were fabulous." So we just started saying, "That's because we're the Fabulous Dyketones."
Did that name cause you any problems getting bookings? The Dyketones name?
Yes. Later on, when we were coming across country, that's when the name started being troublesome, because here is a gay and lesbian mecca, so it's safe here. But the minute we left, when you were out of that, and we would try to get into anything else, it was troublesome. And people would always tell me, as the booking agent and as the band leader, you know, even if we were actually in the middle of doing a gig on a break or something, they'd say, "You know, you are really, really good, and you'd go far if you'd just change your name." But the whole point was to be who we were and to actually pioneer what we believed was right. And the more we played, the more older lesbians would come up to us at the end of the show and with tears, you know, just quietly coming down their faces, say things like, this was my music. And when I went to school and later, I couldn't dance to my own music with my girlfriend. And now I can. And it would give me chills. In fact, it just did again when I told you. Well,
you helped them reclaim their music.
Yes, and I did it for me as well because it was my music too.
I've read that some of your fans would see the shows over and over.
Yes. They used to come here when we first started.
Here being Provincetown.
Provincetown, yes. Our cover was only $5 in the 80s, in the early 80s. And so it was affordable for people to come night after night after night. And there were actually people that would come. We had a six-day run. We had one night off. They would come six nights out of six and bring friends each time. It was really something.
Did you have groupies?
We did. We sure did. Sometimes it was a little, you had to be very...
Too intense?
Yeah. You had to be very polite and ask people not to follow you.
She went away, and you hung around and bothered me every night. And when I wouldn't go out with you, you said things that weren't very nice.
My girlfriend's back and you're gonna be in trouble.
Band perform all year or just in the summer or what?
We'd perform six nights a week in the summer, and then I would tour us back to the West Coast, to San Francisco or Portland, Oregon.
And then you moved to Provincetown for good?
In 87, yeah. My partner at the time was the drummer, and I said, how do you feel about just staying here and I can put the band together from here instead of from the West Coast? And then tour out here. And she thought it was a great idea, too. So that's what I did that year.
How many Dyketones have there been?
Up through 03, there have been 79 Dyketones.
And what qualified someone to be a Dyketone? Did they play, a couple weeks a year or all summer? Or what crossed the line to make it official for a person?
Just that they played. There are some people that just stood in for one night or one show, but they still had a stage name, a Dyketone name, and so they are still, in the roster.
Over the years, about what percent of the members have been lesbian?
I would say 98%. We actually had one resident Dyketone.
I did an internet search, of course, on just the word Dyketone, and I found several people, who put that on their, their resume, I guess. Melissa Sigler, Sherry Lynn.
Yeah.
Naomi Little Bear. Lisa Koch.
Yeah.
Brendan Lyons.
All of those people have, every name you just named, have CDs of their own out.
They have websites, yeah. Brendan Lyons, Amy Roberts, Betsy Sykes, Brianna Caton, Robin Borthwick.
Yeah, she's the current drummer.
And Sherry Hackney-Cade.
Mm.
And the Therapy Sisters.
Yeah, and the Therapy Sisters are my two guitarists right now.
Are they currently, you know, sort of in the group?
Oh, they are, definitely. And they are the Therapy Sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know them.
Yeah, and Robin Borthwick. Yeah, because you're from Texas. And Robin Borthwick is from Houston.
Actually, I've met her.
Yeah, she's the current drummer. And Melissa Siegler is now residing in Nashville, and she's the current keyboardist.
Years, how did your audience change or the reception you received?
Great question. Here in Provincetown, where we became based after 1987, we did very minimal touring after that. But we kind of became a household name here, and we were booked as the hometown band for many years. And people who would come here to vacation grew up, and pretty soon there were there is one family that has four generations that come to see us.
So you're a local institution.
Yeah, yeah. And when we don't play, if there's a year we don't play like this one, people actually miss us and corner me on the street and say, why aren't you guys playing? You know, what's going on? And so I always have to let them know, you know, we'll be back. It's just taking a break or, you know, whatever the story is.
So the group has not ended?
Oh, gosh, no.
That's good.
No.
Another question. What do you think has been the group's contribution to our culture?
JD, I think that we laid some groundwork for other lesbians, because when we did it, we never knew if there was going to be hostility toward us or not. And perhaps that's the case for some women now, but I doubt that it could feel the way it felt to us back then. And we were the first out lesbian band. We were contemporaries to Alive out of Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm. With Rhiannon.
Yeah, but they weren't out.
And groups like Fanny and so forth, they weren't singing songs that were out either.
No, exactly. Yeah, now Fanny goes way back.
But they didn't sing lyrically lesbian material.
You're right. We did things like Take the Oldies and Change All the Pronouns.
Yes, those are my favorite songs from the CD. My girlfriend's back and she's so fine.
Yeah.
Time.
Any favorite memories of the whole, 28 years or whatever?
Oh, gosh, just, yeah, tons. When women come up to me and say, remember me, and of course you never do, but once they start chatting, there's a feeling you can remember. And people would say, this one woman would say, has come up to me like 3 or 4 times throughout our history together and has said, remember me, I came with my, my neighbor who was my girlfriend, you know, meaning girlfriend like in straight talk. And now she's my girlfriend and we both left our husbands and, we have, 4 kids between us and the kids all know about us and we're out in our life now and, you know, and there's this person that's just glowing telling you this, you know, and, you know that you helped somebody no matter how remotely.
You were part of their process.
Exactly, exactly. And young women who have bands have come up to me and said, you know, you were the first Dykes I ever saw, and I'm doing it now. And you know, we get these thanks in different ways so many times. And it even if it's way in retrospect, it lets me know I was doing the right thing, and when I believed that, I was right.
And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website at www.queermusicheritage.com. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night from midnight to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. The Fabulous Dyketones. And you should recognize this next song immediately.
Do 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 ba da da do ba do 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 this boy do ba da do ba do 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 this boy
that boy took my love away. Oh, he'll regret it someday.
Of course, that's the Beatles song, This Boy, and it's done by a small ensemble of the Seattle Men's Chorus called Captain Smarty Pants. Last year, they released a CD called Undercover, and the director of Captain Smarty Pants is the subject of my second feature interview for this show. Eric Lane Barnes has quite a resume. He's worked with the Windy City Chorus Organization in Chicago. He's currently assistant director of the Seattle Men's Chorus, and has done a number of commissions for gay choruses around the country. And he's written a number of musicals. It's through these musicals that I first became a fan. For a number of years, one of our best Houston theater companies was Theater New West, and its director, Joe Watts, mounted a very successful run of a musical called Fairy Tales several years ago. And 3 years ago came Fruit Cocktail. And in 2003 was one called The Stops. All of these were written by Eric Lane Barnes, so it was only natural that I would want to talk to Eric about his various projects. I'll start off with the newest one, with the group Captain Smarty Pants. Tell us about Captain Smarty Pants.
Captain Smarty Pants is a vocal ensemble of 9 homosexual men and we've been described as the illegitimate love child of NSYNC and Monty Python. And we pride ourselves in making delicious harmony and making audiences sick with laughter at the same time. And that's not an easy feat. We recently put out a CD called Undercover, which is cover tunes of pop songs from the 70s through 2004. Fernando is on the CD, as is Rufus Wainwright's Vibrate and Big Yellow Taxi, Killing Me Softly, three songs by Cher. It's gay on one hand, but on the other hand, it's just fun pop music. But I guess it's okay to be fun and pop and gay all at the same time.
How'd y'all pick the songs for the Captain Smarty Pants album?
We just kind of batted around, and we realized that audiences get a special kick out of hearing new takes on cover songs. And we just kind of batted around ideas of songs, things that appealed to all of us, songs appealed to all of us. We wanted them to have both a certain, if not a specific gay sensibility, we wanted them to at least be able to be put into a gay context, like This Boy, the Beatles song. You know, it's the Beatles, and of course the gayest thing about the Beatles was their manager. But the words so read like a gay song. Xanadu, I mean, that was a natural. Fernando, that was a natural. Cher, that was a natural. And then we just kind of like played around with some other things, and we stuck with what we liked the most. And we were going to do Find Me Somebody to Love, the Queen song.
Oh my.
Yeah. But, oh my God, that was probably the most difficult thing we ever tried to work on, because there's, at any given time, there's like 12 voices going, and you can't just halfway do that song. I mean, if we would have done a version that would have been paler than the Queen version, it would have sounded really dumb, because Freddie Mercury just, you know, wails.
And what
it.
Version wouldn't sound paler than
the I know, version. I know. That's the thing. You try to do a song like that, and it's impossible to do it better. And so we went through that one a couple times and went, this isn't going to work. And a friend of ours recommended Use Me by Bill Withers. And so we found I made a fun arrangement of that.
Tell me about Suddenly Seymour.
Well, okay. The reason why that's on the CD is we had done a Broadway show last spring, and we wanted to find some tie-in between that show and the CD, because we knew that the CD would be released at the time of the concert. We wanted to be able to sell CDs and link it to the concert. And it worked. We sold a couple hundred during the concert. Mark, the guy who sings Audrey, had always wanted to do Audrey on stage. And he would always imitate Audrey during rehearsal. And so we figured that would be a natural, because Suddenly Seymour has a real pop sound to it. And Little Shop of Horrors has a real gay sensibility to it. I mean, Howard Ashman being gay, for one. But also just the whole downtrodden love story, geek makes good kind of thing. It's a real poignant show, even though it's really silly. It is a real poignant show, and that song, I think, is a real poignant song. And as we were considering if we should put that on the album or not, we sang through it, and we went, oh yeah, yeah, that's we got to do this, because it's so much fun. And the thing I liked about Suddenly Seymour is that Mark chose, well, we kind of all agreed that he shouldn't sing Audrey's lines up in Ellen Green's range, because that would have sounded really weird. And so we just had him sing really breathy and really girly. And maybe it's because I can picture Mark in his costume, because he did the whole leopard print tights and high heels and, you know, big blonde hair and everything for the show. But when I hear the song on the album, I picture Mark as Ellen Green as Audrey.
Sadly, Seymour, sweet understanding. Seymour's my
tell
friend.
Tell me this feeling lasts till forever. Tell me the bad times are clean washed away.
Please understand that it's still strange and frightening. Losers like I've been, it's so hard to say.
Tell me about Vitamin Q.
Well, that is kind of our theme song, and that's a song I wrote for the Pants. And we close all of our shows with Vitamin Q. And it's basically kind of the message that says, kind of go through the story of questioning, is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with me? And then realizing, no, there's nothing wrong with me. And all I got to do is just be myself. And then, you know, we tie it into, and that's why we're here, because we'd like to share who we are with you.
I was feeling down on the dumps, couldn't be measles, was the mumps. Went to the doc, said, what'll I do?
He said, take your vitamin Q.
Said, I'd take vitamin A, B, C. The doc said, that don't matter to me. If you're feeling puny and blue,
you gotta take your vitamin Q.
Vitamin
Q will make you dance, dance around in your underpants. Vitamin Q will bring you new romance. Do-wah, do-wah, do-wah. Vitamin Q will make you think, the whole dang world is painted pink. Do-wah, the buckaroo, do the born, take your vitamin Q. Ooh.
I better pause and give a little bit of your background. We kind of skipped over that. What did you do in Chicago for the choruses?
I worked for Windy City Gay Chorus, and I took over the direction of the Windy City Slickers, which was a vocal octet. And after the first year of directing them, I formed a women's group with the same organization, because they had both a men's chorus and a mixed chorus. And so from 95 through 99, I directed those two groups with Windy City. And prior to that time, I had done a lot of stuff as a musical director of cabaret shows and musical shows, working in both equity and non-equity houses, and had been doing more and more of my own like cabaret shows. And so I came to the Windy City groups with a lot of musical theater background and having written a lot of stuff. And so I figured, well, I'll just write stuff for these groups and see how that flies. And worked out pretty well.
And you've done a lot of commission work, too, for a variety of groups.
Yeah, lots of choruses, because the Gala Chorus Network is pretty tight. And for those who don't know, Gala Choruses stands for Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses. The umbrella organization is about 25 years old. And every 4 years, there's a Gala festival where all the Gala choruses converge on a town. And for a week, we perform for one another. And it's a huge thing. It's like anywhere from 5,000 to 8,000 people that are participating in this. And when I went to my first Gala Festival, that first year that I was directing with Windy City, I realized there is a huge niche here of music to be written for this gay chorus movement. So I set out to appeal to other Gala choruses and kind of built up a cottage industry of writing new songs for choruses and also licensing the songs that I'd written for other choruses.
And what got you to Seattle?
The director of Seattle Men's Chorus had seen me in Chicago with the Slickers and with the women's group, Aria, which was the women's ensemble there. I had met him in Dallas at a music director's conference. And Dennis Coleman, who's the director of the Seattle Chorus, he's like looked up to as like the best gay men's chorus director. And it's because of the huge success of Seattle Men's Chorus. And I asked him if I ever would move to Seattle, if there'd be work here for me. And he seemed to think that there would be. And so it was about a year after that, he talked to me and asked me if I was serious about considering moving to Seattle. And I said, yeah, I'd consider it. he then contacted me a little bit later and said they were creating a job and that he wanted me to apply for it. And I applied for it and I auditioned for it and they hired me and here I am.
In 2001, the Seattle Men's Chorus released a CD called Fruit of the Month Club, which included Captain Smarty Pants doing the song Available. And I ask Eric about that next. Tell me about Available.
Well, what can I say? It's, when people hear the song, they say, oh my God, that is so my story. And like when a lesbian hears it, so often I'll hear, oh my God, that is such a lesbian song. Or if a gay man hears it, he'll say, oh my God, that is such a gay man song. Or if like a teenage girl hears it, she'll say, oh my God, that is such a teenage girl song. And I think it's kind of a universal thing, falling in love with someone who couldn't care less about you. And the main character is surrounded by his conscience, and the conscience is his backup singers. And his conscience is trying to show him, look, the guy is screwing you over. And finally, the conscience gets through, and finally the conscience sings the chorus, and then the soloist is kind of like trying to get a word in edgewise. It's my favorite kind of comedy in that it's based on something real and pretty painful. And I think people laugh because they laugh out of recognition. And it's one of those teeny bopper, tear your heart out, 60s Phil Spector kinds of Be My Baby kinds of songs.
The moment I saw you, it was love at first sight. I swear you sang to only me the entire night. I gave you my number on a napkin after the show. 8 days I waited by the phone, 'cause I wanted you to know I'm available.
This is your conscience here.
Now, many of Eric's songs have shown up on various releases, but that's not true of the songs from one of the productions called The Stops, which was produced in Houston in 2003. Now, The Stops, I haven't heard those songs anywhere else.
Yeah, they're kind of specific to that show. Kind of hard to take those out of context.
Tell me about that production.
The premise is three lady organists who meet and decide to put together a show and take it on the road. And as they're performing their material, they discover that their favorite organist and Christian songwriter is gay. And how they deal with that knowledge is basically what drives the engine of the show. All the songs are written as if they're written by this character, whose name is Dale Meadows. He's a fictional person. There isn't a real Dale Meadows. It was really fun writing songs deliberately cheesy.
If only I weren't in this situation.
If only I weren't in this particular pot of stew.
If only I didn't have this orientation.
If only I weren't me instead of you.
But you are Blanche, you are Blanche. That's one of the things in life you can't deny. Thank your lucky star, Blanche, that you are Blanche. Accept your life, don't sit around and cry.
If only I could have learned to throw a football.
If only I had never heard YMCA.
If only I could stop designing Barbie clothes.
If only I were glad instead of gay.
But you are Blanche, you are Blanche.
Don't sit around and complain. Come out of the armoire, Blanche, 'cause you are Blanche.
Blanche. Don't be such a baby, baby Jane, 'cause you are.
Before we leave the stops, I'd like to hear about the fundamental.
Okay. Well, imagine the Andrews sisters as Baptists singing a song about a dance that you do when you believe that the Bible is the Word of God and that fundamental Christianity is the only way to look at life and be accepted into heaven. And it's just this very bouncy, let's hate everybody except for us kind of song. It's a very bitter song. It's very cynical, but it's so bouncy and happy that it counterbalances the bitter, hateful things that it says. We performed that actually with Smarty Pants, just because that song you can take out of context, and you can sing about fundamentalism, and pretty much anybody these days will get the joke, unless you're a fundamentalist, because fundamentalists generally don't have senses of humor, especially when it comes to religion. I heard a comedian say, "Have you ever noticed that people that are so eager to tell you about their religion never want to hear about yours?"
There's a dance that's sweeping the nation. All you need's a congregation. Everybody's doing it, you can too. Here's what you gotta do. Point your finger here and there. Wave your morals in the air. Shake your head but not your hips. Talk a lot about an apocalypse. Formulate some sort of creed. The promise is heaven guaranteed. Don't be subtle, don't be gentle. Do the fundamental. Doolia, 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 da da. Bow, 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 boy. Now create an enemy on whom to vent your energy. Is anything wrong with the world today? It's his fault. Make him pay. Sell your panic door to door. That's what holy war is for. Be judgmental. It's not accidental when you do the fundamental. Doolia, 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 da da. Doolia, 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 da da. Catholics, Protestants, and Jews. Both the Shiites and the Druze. Anyone who sits in pews can do the fundamental. Militia compounds way out west. Even Buddhists over in Budapest. People giving out personality tests are doing the fundamental. Doolia, 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 da da. Ba 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 boy, boy.
That was The Fundamental, and before that, But You Are, Blanche. And those versions come from the Houston production of The Stops from 2003, and were sung by Robert Leeds, Michael Herron, and Chris Poole. Blanche, by the way, has never been recorded anywhere, and I want to thank director Joe Watts for allowing me to share those with you. Now, I mentioned earlier that before he moved to Seattle, Eric worked with the Windy City Chorus Groups in Chicago. In that capacity, he directed their group called Windy City Slickers. They released an album in 1999 called Sunday, and the last two songs we'll cover on this show come from that CD. Tell me about the song Your Man.
Your Man is one of the songs, I listen to it, and I think, did I write that? That's a little hipper than I thought I was. It's an a cappella song, kind of, I don't know, would you say it's doo-woppy? It's not really doo-woppy. It's basically taking movie images, things from movies, the way that men are in movies, and saying, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that. I just want to be your man. I just want to be, you know, your lover.
I don't want to be your matinee idol. I don't want to be your adoring fan. I don't want to be your stage door Johnny. I just want to be your man. Ow. I don't want to be your new release. I don't want to be your one-night concession stand. I don't want to be your Friday night rental. I just want to be your man.
And I'll do anything I can if you will let me be your man.
I don't want to be your Lawrence of Arabia.
I don't want to be your Peter Pan. I don't want to be your
Obi-Wan Kenobi. I just want to be your man. Oh man,
that Pulp Fiction reservoir dog. I don't wanna be a cool Daddy Luke.
No, I don't
wanna be your Terminator, Darth Vader, Gladiator. I just wanna be your two thumbs up, way up.
Dang, dang, ba-duddy, dang, dang, ba-duddy, dang, dang, ba-duddy, dang.
I don't wanna be your
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
I don't wanna be your
Bad News Bear.
I don't wanna be your
Shelley Winters Marathon. I just wanna be your man. Oh man, I don't wanna be your polyester cry, cry baby. I don't wanna be your Rocky Horror Show.
No, I don't
wanna be your Oklahoma Dream Ballet sequence. I just wanna be your best boy. Key grip.
I don't wanna be.
Now I've got one more song to share with you, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening. And to thank Shar Priolo from the fabulous Dyketones and Eric Lane Barnes for their interviews. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com, and I wish you would. My website, of course, is at www.queermusicheritage.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. Okay, we were talking about the album Sunday by the Windy City Slickers, and I just had to hear about the song Drama Queen.
Based on a true story, I think everybody can relate to someone being a drama queen, somebody who is taking a small situation and blowing it hugely out of proportion, or somebody misunderstanding a small word or something, or somebody who just absolutely has to have their way and has to have everything revolve around them, or they throw a fit. And it just basically tells the history of a person growing from a child drama queen into an adult drama queen. We sing it very seriously with big Norma Desmond eyes. And the time that we performed it, that it was the most fun. We had footlights. The first time we sang, 'cause I'm a drama queen. When we sang drama, the footlights came up and there was a psych behind us, and just, you know, the light coming from below, and then the huge shadows on the psych. It was just a sight to behold.
On the night I was born, I was so pale and forlorn that right away the nurse knew something wasn't right. While the other baby slept, I wrung my little hands and wept. I held my breath until my lips went white.
The doctor took my folks aside, and in a manner dignified, he handed them a medical brochure.
He said, I have some news that won't be easy to endure. We ran the test 2 times just so we could be sure. Your son has a condition and there isn't any cure. Your son's a drama queen. He insists we reattach the umbilical cord. He's a drama queen. Going to have to transfer him to the drama ward. His whining and his crying isn't ever going to stop. Here's a list of cities where you're going to have to shop. We're monitoring your movements, so don't try to baby swap. He's a drama queen. Please take him home now.
By the time I was 3, I'd learned the value of TV as a resource for a drama queen in training. I learned to twist my face like Dr. Smith in Lost in Space, and Dora taught me lots about complaining. By the time I was 14, I'd grown devoted to the screen, where I worshipped Betty, Judy, and Joan.
Especially Joan.
I learned dramatic phrases like, I want to be alone.
I carried smelling salts and hanky scented with cologne. I spent every moment talking on my princess code. I was a drama queen.
I spoke like Katharine Hepburn and I dressed like Oscar Wilde.
Such a drama queen.
I transferred to the high school for the irritating child.
My fits of melodrama came complete with curtain calls. I mastered both the single teardrop and Niagara Falls. My life was like an outtake from the Valley of the Dolls. A drama queen, I had no shame. Zip. It isn't difficult to turn the smallest thing into a huge ordeal. Each remark presents a splendid chance to be offended. I'm more dramatic than Eugene O'Neill.
I throw tantrums writing email. I throw fits behind the wheel.
It's vital for the world to know exactly how I feel. Is always someone else's fault. I'm a drama queen.
Oh my God!
Don't touch me!
Waiter!
Ey, Gewalt.
Everything's a crisis when you're a drama queen. Every situation is a chance to make a scene. Take a look backstage, you'll see exactly what we mean. We are